after we talked with an international trade expert last week on the Trans-Pacific Partnership trade deal, who said that this would be good for the economies of the 12 participating countries, including the U.S., several of you asked to hear from other guests who are concerned about what else this trade deal would do. So today we will hear from a different perspective. Good morning, I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It is 8 minutes past 7 o'clock on this Tuesday, November 12th. Our guest this hour says the TPP would come at the expense of American jobs and local control over business regulation and more. So, is the TPP a good deal or a raw deal? What questions do you have? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Our guest is David Newby, president of the Wisconsin Fair Trade Coalition and former president of the Wisconsin AFL-CIO. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy.
Long time no talk to.
So it has been a long time. It's good to be back on the show.
Yeah, it's good to have you back here. Well, as I mentioned, we did talk with this TPP supporter from the Brookings Institute last week, who said this was a good deal. Are you saying it's a raw deal?
Well, you know, we've been told before the passage of every major so-called free trade agreement that this was going to be good for the United States. It was going to create jobs, increase exports, raise incomes. And every time we have been not just disappointed, but we have lost jobs, wages have declined, and even though we may have increased exports to a certain degree, imports have increased even more, so that our trade deficit every time has risen rather than been reduced. So it is a raw deal for Americans and particularly for American workers. It's also manifested itself in the fact that American workers have really not had a raise since the late 1970s. Their wages have been basically flat since that time once you adjust for inflation. And there are some other factors at work, but basically that's a result of these international trade deals that, while sold on the basis that they are going to increase jobs and incomes, actually do precisely the opposite.
You know, David, our guest last week said there was not a great sucking sound of jobs after NAFTA. And, you know, some callers took her to task, and we questioned that. But, I mean, you say we lost jobs. She says, no, we didn't.
And how she could say that, and, you know, I listened to the show, and she certainly seems to be a very well-qualified academic, and yet the figures are so clear. I mean, here in Wisconsin, we have lost, for example, just last year, we lost close to 3,000 jobs as a result of trade agreements, and since 1994, we've lost about 75,000. In the United States, as a result of NAFTA itself, we've lost about 2.5 million. And that is not simply a statistic I'm pulling out of the air. These are jobs lost that have been certified by the U.S. government for workers to get additional benefits if their jobs are lost because of international trade and foreign competition. And once they are certified, they get increased unemployment compensation benefits, they get training credits to retrain for new jobs and so forth. So, again, these are not figures that are simply estimates that are made up by those of us who find our current trade policy to be absolutely lacking in terms of benefits to American workers. These are figures that actually come from the government itself, and they would not certify these people for additional benefits if they were not actually lost by international trade, because it's costing the government money.
Well, critics also say that the Trans-Pacific Partnership will step on buy local and living wage ordinances, which exist in Madison and Dane County. How would the TPP do that, and why?
Well, there are certain principles in international so-called free trade agreements, and one of the things that they attempt to do is to give foreign corporations the same rights as American corporations, or, you know, American corporations being given the same rights as corporations in other countries. And what that means is that the government is not permitted to give preference to American corporations in government procurement. In other words, any kind of expenditures by government, whether at the federal, state, or local level. And this was one of the, probably the most important factor for members of the Madison City Council and the Dane County Board when they considered resolutions a few weeks ago to come out against the Trans-Pacific Partnership and to say that basically these are agreements that will limit our ability to pass legislation, to pass ordinances that will benefit our local citizens and hamstring us from using our local taxpayer money to the best effect. There are also limitations due to what are called investor-to-state lawsuits, which began under the World Trade Organization but are vastly expanded under the Trans-Pacific Partnership. These are lawsuits which foreign corporations can file, not against our own governments, but in international tribunals, saying that if there is a new law, a new regulation, which reduces the profits that they expected when they actually made their first investment or acquisition, that they can sue for those lost profits. And these suits are heard in international tribunals, a panel of three judges who are international corporate lawyers, and they are the ones that make the decision whether that has happened or not, and they can actually impose penalties, monetary penalties upon our governments for the loss of those profits, or they can require that the government take the option of rescinding that new regulation, that new law. So that hamstrings us in terms of improving environmental laws, in terms of passing on the local level any kind of increases in minimum wage or a living wage ordinances. Our government is hamstringed and limited at many levels in terms of what it can do. It's all in the name of giving corporations greater power, and it's a result of the fact that our trade agreements basically these days are not about what we think of as trade legislation of reducing tariffs and custom duties and so forth, but rather deregulating multinational corporations to our loss in terms of jobs and in terms of the control of our own economy.
Holy cow. One Dane County supervisor said that this TPP would affect food safety laws, internet privacy, consumer protection, financial deregulation. How can a trade agreement have such a broad reach?
Well, for the Trans-Pacific Partnership, for example, and I should say that this agreement has been negotiated in secret. We don't have the text of what different countries, including the United States, are putting up as negotiating positions. What we know is what we know from leaks from various negotiators and countries that are not pleased with things that have been agreed upon or have been put on the table. Even members of Congress have only very limited access to what our trade representatives are negotiating. And we won't know what's really in this agreement until it's presented to Congress, which is another issue we need to talk about. But we do know that in terms, for example, of agriculture, that there are limitations on, in fact, a prohibition of labeling foods that are crossing borders, that country of origin would no longer be permitted, that you would not know what country your food is coming from when you buy something at the grocery store. There are also limits in terms of inspection of food that other countries are assumed to have standards or are presumably required to have standards that we cannot verify, that their foods that they are exporting have the same safety requirements that our own foods do. And as we hear in the news every once in a while, we don't even have that good of a system ourselves. Trying to think of some of the other.
Let me hold you there for now, because we do have a break coming up, and we will invite callers with questions or views on the Trans-Pacific Partnership Free Trade Agreement. 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org if you have a question or a view on this. We heard from a supporter of the TPP last week. Now we are hearing from a critic. David Newby, president of the Wisconsin Fair Trade Coalition, former president of the Wisconsin AFL-CIO. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 20 minutes past 7 o'clock on this Tuesday, November 12th. We are talking with David Newby, president of the Wisconsin Fair Trade Coalition, former president of the Wisconsin AFL-CIO, about problems with the TPP, the Trans-Pacific Partnership Agreement, a trade deal. The Asian-Pacific Free Trade Deal now involves 12 Pacific Rim countries stretching from the U.S. to New Zealand, from Japan to Chile. We heard from a guest last week from the Brookings Institute, an international trade expert, who said that this was going to improve the standard of living in all participating countries, that it was going to help the global economy and help the economies in those particular countries. We are getting a different perspective on the Trans-Pacific Partnership during this hour and welcoming your thoughts and your questions. Since we have callers who are waiting, let's go to the phones. Jim in Saukville is with us. Hello, Jim.
Good morning.
Morning.
So I'm curious, who are these secret negotiators and what allows them to do this?
You know, David?
These agreements are negotiated by people who are specified by and designated by their own national governments. In our case, the U.S. Trade Representative, Michael Froman, is our lead negotiator, but there are all sorts of other government employees that are at the table. But how, there are additional people involved, and this is one of the very troubling aspects of these negotiations. There are approximately 600 corporate advisors to these negotiators who are certified to be a part of these negotiations and who have actually greater access to what is being proposed, both by the United States and by other countries, than do members of Congress. So these are international negotiations, government to government, but they are held in secret, and we do not have access to what they are actually negotiating, nor do members of Congress. For example, it was only, I believe, starting last June that they were allowed limited access to what was actually on the table. They can ask to see certain parts of the negotiating proposals. They are, however, not allowed to take notes or any voice recordings of what they read. And once they have seen what is being negotiated, they cannot talk about it with any specifics because it's considered to be classified information. So the American public, as well as Congress, is left really in the dark while these agreements are being negotiated. And we should mention that this is the largest trade agreement that's being negotiated since NAFTA, and it will affect in total about 40% of world production, of world gross domestic product. So we're talking about a major event here, a major change in our economy and in the global economy.
Yeah, it is a big deal. And it was thought that the negotiations might be done by the end of the year, though that might be in question. And then, it's unlikely that it will be done by the end of the year?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think most people are saying sometime in the spring, probably.
Mm-hmm. And part of it was delayed because of the government shutdown, because the president couldn't attend one of the meetings?
That was a very minor part of the delay. I mean, there are major issues that are being discussed here because, and we started to talk about this earlier, but most of the negotiations have to do with setting regulations internationally in various aspects of our economy. For example, financial services, banking, agriculture, food safety levels, and so forth. And these become actual ceilings for all countries. As a result, when Congress finally gets Trans-Pacific Partnership, if it comes to Congress, not only is the international agreement itself voted upon by Congress, but also any changes in our national laws that are necessary in order to comply with what has been negotiated. So, for example, it's expected that in the financial services sector, there will be some rollback of the changes that were made after the economic collapse in 2008, which will deregulate our big banks like Goldman Sachs and so forth, roll back some of the new regulations that were passed very inadequately, but were passed after the crash. In terms of pharmaceuticals, the drug companies are very concerned and very much involved in these negotiations. What they want is a longer period of patents on drugs. And it is expected that the patents will be lengthened. That means higher costs for us here in the United States for drugs, but it is disastrous for third world countries because they need access to inexpensive generic drugs. And the pharmaceutical companies, through these agreements, and particularly through the Trans-Pacific Partnership, expect that they will get longer periods of patents and therefore be able to charge higher prices.
Let's take another call from Gene in Madison. Hello, Gene.
Yes. This is probably the most important thing going on. And, of course, please do mention that we have the Transatlantic Investment Partnership, which is just as bad and just as big, and it's going on and being negotiated in secret between the EU and the U.S. But I would like to point out that the Australian government, after massive debates in one of our in their parliament, decided cigarettes should be sold in plain packets and with markings of shocking health warnings. Well, the Philip Morris sued them through Hong Kong, where they had a trade deal, saying that they needed a vast sum of money for a loss of their intellectual property. And what this points out is these aren't trade deals. These are regulatory efforts to regulate things. And I would ask my Tea Party friends, who, having talked to Tea Party types, and they have no clue that this is even happening, which I find interesting, what if a drug company decided that, gee, Texas, you can't ban these birth control pills because that will limit our profits? You can take this so many different places. Once you put these international trade rules into effect, which, of course, should be fast-tracked, which means Congress can only vote up or down, and you can't really look at what it is, you'll get 3 days to read 20,000 pages. I would be curious as to some responses, and especially why we don't have a show about the Transatlantic Investment Partnership.
Well, one show at a time, Gene. We just have a couple of minutes before a news break. Maybe we can save the fast-track stuff until after we come back. But what about his examples? Right. Is he right on there?
The examples are correct, and in fact, it is expected that the restrictions on the packaging of cigarettes in Australia, that will be rolled back in the Trans-Pacific Partnership. At least that's one of the items on the table, which Australia is resisting, but who knows if it'll be in the final package or not. Probably will be. The caller is also correct in saying that that we need to be aware of the negotiations going on with the European Union, but those have really just begun. Those are going to take years and years and be even more complicated than the negotiations for the Trans-Pacific Partnership. But basically, what she is saying is absolutely correct. And it's a good example of the fact that we are talking not really about trade as we usually think of it. We're talking about deregulation of multinational corporations. That's the core and the heart of these negotiations.
We'll check news from NPR and from Wisconsin Public Radio, and then we'll continue to take your questions, your comments, your views on the Trans-Pacific Partnership, or TPP. We talked with a TPP supporter last week who said that this trade agreement would rejuvenate national economies. Now we are hearing from a guest who says that it would do a lot more than that, and it would hurt American jobs and local control over business regulation and more. And we welcome your questions, comments at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Is the TPP a good deal or a raw deal? Our guest is David Newby, president of the Wisconsin Fair Trade Coalition and former president of the Wisconsin AFL-CIO. I'm Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. The United States and 11 Pacific Rim nations are currently negotiating the Trans-Pacific Partnership Free Trade Agreement. And we are talking with a guest who is a critic of this plan this hour. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's coming up on 7:37 on this Tuesday, November 12th. Our guest this hour says the TPP would come at the expense of American jobs and local control over business regulation and much more. And we're welcoming your thoughts and your questions at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Our guest is David Newby. He is the former president of the Wisconsin AFL-CIO. He is the president of the Wisconsin Fair Trade Coalition. We have other callers and emailers to get to, David, but we are carrying over the topic of fast-tracking this free trade agreement, this TPP. A caller before news time was concerned about that. What exactly does that fast-tracking mean?
Well, fast-track, or as it's currently officially referred to, Trade Promotion Authority, so don't be fooled, is a procedure for passing trade bills. It goes back to the Nixon administration. Essentially, what it does is to transfer most of the constitutional responsibilities of Congress to regulate international trade, to transfer those responsibilities to the executive branch. In other words, to the president and to the president's designees. So when these negotiations are finished, if they do come to a successful conclusion, then the president will actually sign the agreement. It doesn't go into effect, but he signs it. It then goes to Congress, and Congress has 60 days to look at the final text, including not only the treaty itself, but also the changes in federal law that are required to conform American law to this new agreement. This agreement will be probably about 6 inches high. That's about what NAFTA was. It'll be impossible, really, for Congress to look at it in the kind of detail that it ought to look at it, given the fact that sweeping changes in our existing law as well as trade policy are involved. After those 60 days, Congress has to vote on the agreement. It has 20 hours of debate in each house, 20 hours in the Senate, 20 hours in the House. No amendments can be made to the legislation submitted by the president. So there can be only a yes or no vote, which means there is tremendous pressure both from the administration as well as from multinational corporations, for legislators to approve the agreement, even if they're not happy with some things that they have seen in the agreement itself. So there's a real assault on democratic procedure and on the ability of Congress to have any idea of what it's really voting on when it comes to the approval of these agreements.
We had a caller.
So fast track has to be, by the way, fast track has to come up as separate legislation before the Congress. The administration and the Congress has not come up with a bill yet, so it's not been introduced, but that's going to be the first big fight, and it's going to be the crucial fight, because if fast track passes, it's going to be very difficult to defeat the Trans-Pacific Partnership itself once it gets to the floor. If fast track is defeated, it's going to be very difficult to pass it.
Well, that's a start on the next question. We had a caller who couldn't stay through the news who just wanted to know what can an individual do to protest this agreement?
Call our senators and members of Congress. As far as we know, all of our senators, well, I should say Senator Johnson, appears to be very much in favor of the agreement. Senator Baldwin is against it. All members of Congress, with the exception of Representative Pocan and Representative Moore, are in favor of it. And so it's basically a Republican-Democratic split, with the exception of Representative Kind up in the western part of the state, who has always been very strongly in favor of these trade deals. So you need to get in touch with your representatives and our senators and make sure that they understand how big an issue this is, because they aren't hearing nearly enough from constituents. And the only way that we can change what's happening is by making them understand that this is a political issue that is absolutely crucial for them and for their reelection, and that people understand the issues and they care about them very deeply.
Travis in Green Bay is with us now. Hi, Travis.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
My question is more getting back to the fundamentals of this whole conversation, because I think that there's a lot of listeners, myself included, that may not understand most of this fully. And my question is, to the guests, what utility does regulations have on trade? More detailed, what would it be like without any regulations?
Yeah, so no regulations at all for any kind of trading, Travis?
Yeah, no government input on any trade. What would that be like?
Well, essentially it would mean that we would have no standards for the quality of goods or the safety of goods coming into the country. We would have no ability to regulate amounts of goods that come into the country. There would essentially be total corporate control of the entire world economic system, which is what we're very quickly getting to anyway. But it's coming about as a result of these negotiations. International trade is important, and I should emphasize that the Fair Trade Coalition and those who are opposed to the Trans-Pacific Partnership are not opposed to international trade itself. The issue is that we need a trade policy and trade agreements that create jobs in the United States and in our trade partners, that protect the environment and worker rights in all of the signatory countries, which these agreements do not do, that they promote public health by guaranteeing the safety of products that are traded internationally, and that they work to raise the standards and quality of life for working people in all the countries that are involved. And that simply is not happening under these current trade agreements.
Peter on Facebook writes, the New York Times editorial board has endorsed this treaty, which is also opposed by the Electronic Frontiers Foundation because it threatens to make our intellectual property laws even worse. So he's saying that the New York Times said yes, but the Electronic Frontiers Foundation said no. I'm not sure if you know about that, David. But what about intellectual property laws? What concerns are there about that?
This is an area that I am not an expert on, mm-hmm. and obviously I don't spend all of my time on this issue. So,
That's fine. So
But let me simply say, the New York Times has always been in favor of quote unquote free trade. There's no trade agreement that they have ever opposed. In terms of intellectual property, the issues are basically that from what we know of leaked information about the Trans-Pacific Partnership, that there would be a tightening up of corporate control over patent rights, including controls over internet content. And it would actually roll back some legislation that was proposed here in the United States to give corporations control over the internet to the detriment of our free access to information over the internet. And that's a good example of how corporations are essentially trying to get around American law and fights that they may have lost here in the United States, and to go around our own Congress and get what they want through these international treaties.
Our guest is David Newby, president of the Wisconsin Fair Trade Coalition, former president of the Wisconsin AFL-CIO. He's telling us what's wrong with what we know about the Trans-Pacific Partnership. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@WPR.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We are getting another perspective on the Trans-Pacific Partnership. This is a global free trade deal involving 12 countries stretching from the U.S. to New Zealand, from Japan to Chile. We heard from a guest last week from the Brookings Institute, an international trade expert, talking about what's right about the TPP, saying it would improve the standard of living in all the participating countries. It would be good for the global economy. Now we are hearing from the president of the Wisconsin Fair Trade Coalition, David Newby, who says that the TPP would come at the expense of American jobs and local control over business regulation and much more. And we're welcoming your viewpoints. We're welcoming your questions. What do you think of the United States' involvement in the TPP? Will it be good for trade and the economy, or are you fearful of these other problems? What questions or concerns do you have? Our next caller is Jill in Rhinelander. Hello, Jill.
Oh, good morning. Thank you for taking my call. What my concern question is regarding this agreement. Does that mean we're going to get more sidewalk chalk for kids with lead in it, more cadmium in kids' jewelry and other things, contaminated pet food things, defective drywall, et cetera, et cetera? Are these things going to have some regulation, or is it just going to be a free-for-all again?
Well, we should note, David Newby, China is not one of the 12 countries. Is that right?
It is not currently one of the 12. In fact, I was going to say that we really should, should have started out by saying who all is involved in this. And very quickly, in addition to the United States, the negotiations include Australia, Brunei Darussalam, Canada, Chile, Japan, Malaysia, Mexico, New Zealand, Peru, Singapore, and Vietnam. A very mixed group of countries in terms of level of development and certainly levels of wages and safety of products in their own countries and what they export. And the concerns that the caller raises are very real because under these agreements, a lot of the inspection responsibilities are shifted from the country where the goods go to the exporting country itself. So these are very real concerns, as we mentioned earlier in the program, with regard to food safety. The other thing is that your guest last week said this is good because all these agreements include labor, worker standards, environmental protections, and so forth. That simply is not true. NAFTA, for example, did not have environmental protections or worker protections. And when we have countries like Vietnam and Brunei involved in these negotiations, those countries don't even allow unions, for example. So we can imagine what the level of worker protection and worker standards is going to be in this final form of the Trans-Pacific Partnership.
Our guest last week also said that this was going to rejuvenate national economies through income gains and efficiency benefits, and that governments would not have to rely on heavy spending. Do you see any of those upsides?
Well, certainly in the United States, that's not been our experience. We have seen a decline in wages, particularly in those industries that are most heavily traded. And we have also seen that even workers outside of those areas have seen their wages stagnate for basically the last 30 years. And that is a result of the fact that they are in head-to-head competition with workers in other countries who are paid a fraction of what American workers are paid. And the attraction of having Vietnam in this agreement is that Vietnam is the new China. China is becoming too expensive. Workers have been able to increase their wages, and companies would like to go to Vietnam much more freely, where wages are about one-third of what they are in China. This means that there is pressure across the board on wages in the United States in any of the countries that have higher wages than these third world countries. So Canada and Australia, for example, workers in those countries are going to be facing the same kind of pressures. So there is no way in which these agreements benefit American workers. We lose exports, we lose jobs as a result of these agreements, and we also find that there is a real pressure to reduce wages as a result of these agreements.
Diane in Madison is with us. Hi, Diane.
Good morning. The big issue has to be stressed. That is, this treaty is going to destroy national sovereignty. There will be no nations that are autonomous that can make up their own policies, regulations, rules, laws that do not coincide with those of this treaty, which means that we are going to be at the beck and call of this treaty. We are not going to be independent nations anymore. David, would you please talk to this?
Well, you're absolutely right. And as I've mentioned, this Trans-Pacific Partnership, as well as the agreement that's just beginning with the European Union, is basically a matter of setting international regulations so that corporations don't have to follow different rules in different countries. We internationalize those, or the term in the trade of trade. Sorry for that pun, is harmonization. So by harmonizing regulations, basically you make them standard across borders to make it easier for corporations to move goods from one country to another. And what we're finding is that when you harmonize those regulations, you harmonize them at a level below what we already have in the United States, which already, in many cases, is inadequate.
Thanks, Diane. Kurt in Chippewa. Hi, Kurt.
My point has been made several times by David and others, that, and I've been following and been affected by these trade agreements for the last 30 years, beginning with NAFTA, North American Free Trade Agreement. With the vast data available that shows that, as David has said, that working people, farmers, both in the developed countries like the United States and in the Mexico and other what we used to call undeveloped countries, the ordinary people are not being helped by this, despite the Walmartization of cheap goods. Why do the politicians keep going along with this? What is the power that pushes Republican and Democratic administrations to keep moving ahead with these agreements?
Basically, it's a matter of corporate power. These negotiations are very lucrative for multinational corporations. They're the ones that are calling the shots. They're the ones that are defining the policies. And they're the ones that are reaping the benefits, not ordinary citizens and ordinary workers, as you say, in not only the United States, but in the other signatory countries. So this is a bill of rights for multinational corporations. And in fact, the head of the World Trade Organization back in the mid-90s said that what the World Trade Organization, which was one of the first big trade agreements, what they were basically doing was writing the Constitution for the global economy. And you can bet your life that if we actually had that sort of a constitution, it would be a corporate constitution and not one of the people of the world, but rather one of multinational corporations.
Carl emails, please discuss the difference between free trade, which favors multinational corporations, and fair trade, which could protect the jobs here in the U.S. And David, in our final, we have less than 2 minutes here. Can the TPP be more of a fair trade agreement rather than a free trade agreement?
It could be. And a lot of it comes down to the kind of regulations that are embodied in the agreement. For example, if the agreement were to guarantee the right of workers in all countries to organize free and independent unions and raise wages both in the United States and in the other countries involved, that would be to the benefit of workers. If there were means by which we could gradually bring up the living standards in less developed countries, that would be a good thing, and we can do that through trade policy. But we are not doing it. We're taking a very different tact, which is not benefiting ordinary people here or in other countries. So we're going exactly the opposite direction we ought to be going, and we're missing out on the possibility of improving living standards and the quality of life, both in the United States and around the world.
In 30 seconds, what do you want listeners to take away from this conversation?
Well, I hope they will pay more attention to the issue. Let me give you just one source, and that is the website of our parent organization, the Citizens Trade Coalition. Citizentrade.org is a very good source of information, and it'll take you to other sources of information that will give you statistics and analysis that you're not going to be seeing in your local paper or hearing on the radio or TV. So, you know, get informed and get in touch with our elected representatives.
Thank you very much. David Newby is with the Wisconsin Fair Trade Coalition. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.